Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Coach Conversations. My name is Catherine Halpin, and it's my extreme pleasure to host this Blog Talk Radio show. Coach Conversations is sponsored by the International Coach Federation Phoenix Chapter. It's produced by Anna Malikian, Ph.D., ACC, and a Book Yourself Solid Elite Certified Coach. And it's hosted by me, Catherine Halpin, MCC. You can visit our show page, blogtalkradio.com/ICF Phoenix. There you can find links to our websites. If you're listening to the show live and have a computer nearby, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/ICF Phoenix. You'll find a post on this show, and then we're going to use that as our virtual chat room during the show. If you have comments, questions, or insights, please write them there. Even if you're listening to the recording of the show, visit our page, facebook.com/ICF Phoenix. We would love to hear from you. This is some very important information if you are a coach. You can now get free CCEUs for ICF-accredited coaches when you listen to Coach Conversations. All 30 months of our previous shows all qualify for CCEU credits with the ICF. These particular credits may be used for individual credential renewals. Visit ICF Phoenix for more details. And today, we are very honored to have a special guest, Judy Feld, MCC. And Judy's going to be sharing with us 2 decades as a coach, tips, tools, and not-so-secret revelations. Judy Feld, MCC, has been coaching since 1995 with an international practice that includes a wide variety of executives, entrepreneurs, managers, scientists, and business teams. Judy has extensive experience in career, leadership, change, and communications coaching for professionals at all levels. She was a pioneer in the development of group coaching models for corporations and organizations. Judy is a sought-after speaker at professional conferences and workshops. Judy was also the co-founder of the Executive and Professional Coaching Program at the University of Texas at Dallas, which accepted its first cohort class in September 2005. Judy now serves on the faculty and is the Director of Training and Credentialing for this ICF-accredited coach training program. Judy also was instrumental in the creation of the award-winning coaching initiative in UTD's Executive MBA program and continues to serve as an executive coach in that program. Judy Fell was the 2003 president of the International Coach Federation, the ICF, the 13,000-member nonprofit organization that serves professional coaches. She served on the board of directors for 8 years. Judy Fell is an ICF Master Certified Coach, MCC, one of the first 20 coaches to receive that designation at its inception in 1998. If you want more information about Judy Feld and her coaching programs, visit her website at coachnet.com. So, Judy, thank you so much for joining us today. We're just so pleased that you could make time.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I love hanging around with coaches and people who are interested in coaching.
Yes, well, that's us. That's the whole purpose of our Coach Conversations Blog Talk Radio show. We want to promote the profession of coaching and try to encourage coaches to join the ICF and get accredited and sustain their accreditation and get their coach training from accredited coach training schools like UT Dallas. So we are so happy that you can be here today and share with us. Now, I had the privilege of serving on the board for only 2 years of the ICF, but with you both years. And so I'd love to I know a little bit about your background, but I'd love to just dive in a little deeper, if that's okay, before we drill down with the coaching questions. So, Judy, where did you grow up?
Well, if I have grown up at all, it would have been in New York City. But we moved to Dallas in 1970. So I'm almost more of a Texan than a New Yorker, except for the way I talk. I came here, got 2 graduate degrees from SMU, went to work at a number of corporations in the area, and, you know, was very much entrenched in a corporate career. My graduate degrees are in technical fields. That was my initial work. And gradually, over the years, I did that shifting. And I do a lot of presentation and work on career resiliency. And some of that I kind of learned and picked up along the way and have done a lot of work studying that as well, because I think many of us here on this call, and I know, Catherine, you're one of them, have applied that very valuable trait of career resiliency to make your own path through. It was 1994 when I voluntarily left American Airlines. I was a vice president in AMR Information Services and doing international joint ventures. I lived and worked in Paris for a while, came back to the corporate life, and had this realization that I wanted something different. And it took me some exploration, but I found the profession of coaching, and it was perfect. It has been perfect, and best job I ever had.
I will second that. And I imagine that your international experience forming those joint ventures really gave you exposure to why you wanted to move into coaching and do the corporate and the group work to help people build win-win-win. I'm sure in those big corporate environments it was always so many silos and so much struggle to get people to come together. So it was such a great background.
The concept of coaching was either new or non-existent, you know, early 1990s. And there was something else that was developing, and that was that whole concept of virtual relationships, virtual organizations. And this was before the Internet was ubiquitous, and so you had to work a little harder to get those virtual connections and virtual alliances, and it was there that started the whole concept for my book, Smart Match Alliances. But really, it was a very personal, introspective thing that caused me to make the shift. Not what I noticed in the corporation, is what I noticed in myself as what I wanted from then on. And it was three things. I wanted additional independence, autonomy, and creativity. And I wasn't feel like I was getting any of those, you know, in my series of corporate jobs. And even that last corporate job, you know, in glamorous Paris.
Mm-hmm. Even in Paris, you didn't have that feeling of independence and autonomy and creativity. Wow.
Oh, no, because there I was, you know, with a very, you know, corporate agenda. Now, that is not to say that I couldn't tell you 10 other great things about that gig, but then I came home, you know.
Right. Well, tell us some more about your book, Smart Match Alliances.
Well, it's been out now, I guess, about 10 years, and it really is a book that was written based on the experience of my co-author, Ernest Orienti. Many of you know him. He has been a coach for about as long as I have been a coach. And we started looking at, I think if I had to pick one word out that started driving what we started teaching and training and coaching on, it was the leverage to grow your business through what we were loosely calling alliances. And what that meant was taking a look in many different ways at how you could take your assets and basically multiply them in a way so that, you know, the old cliche, the sum becomes greater, the whole becomes greater than the sum of the parts. So the book is full of, and it's available in paperback on my website and on Amazon, but it's full of actual samples of alliances, ways to create alliances, and one thing which a lot of people find very valuable is an alliance ability checklist. And what that does is get you thinking in that creative way about forming alliances. And again, this is for all kinds of businesses, large and small, and it particularly works well for coaches. But we take a look at that readiness and techniques as far as the solidarity of your business, your skills, your communication, your reputation, your standards. We're really big on high standards. and all the things it takes to develop to be a really strong alliance partner and then attract good alliance partners.
I love that. I love that. I did not know you had that alliance ability checklist in there. I should have bought
well,
the book.
Well, you can
then.
Even... here I am, I'm kind of counterselling the book. You can get the Alliance Ability Checklist for free on my website. And there's
oh,
a whole
thanks.
Resource page there at coachnet.com. Hit resources, and there's a whole list of articles and checklists that you can get. But you'll be happy if you buy the book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, I'm sure. And I think you and Ernest Oriente were two of the very first coaches that came together in a partnership. I've told your
yes.
story to thousands of people over the last 19 years that I've been coaching because it was just an extraordinary story. I don't know if you
well,
want to say anything.
Well, did you tell
that.
The version where we called each other up? After, we were in class together at Coach U, and shout out to Coach U. You know, that's where I got my initial training. And this
right.
was before there were any university programs at all. In
right.
coaching, and, you know, it is a pioneer, of course, and, you know, a very fine private program. So we were in class together, and after one particular class, and I don't know if this is the version you tell, Catherine, we called each other up, and I don't know if Ernest said it first or I said it first, but, you know, that was not as interesting as we would have liked it to be. So Ernest then says to me, I don't know, you know, I like your comments, but I think you know more than the teacher. So I said something back to him, and believe me, they were fine classes. We were just being a little snippy. He said, let's
sure.
do something together. So the thing was, let's do a radio show.
Oh,
and
I did not
figured,
hear that
oh,
part of the
oh, yeah, that was our first thing. We researched it. We figured out topics. We were going to propose it. But we meant real radio, call-in radio, because this capability wasn't yet available on the very new World Wide Web. Okay,
right.
That's what everyone was calling it.
Right.
And so we started doing it until we figured out there was no way we could make any money from a radio show. And we were really interested. We were both new to coaching and wanted to grow our practice. And so then we decided to coin the term teleforum and have what is almost a combination of group coaching and a teleclass where people get together, and this was telephone only. No webinar capability existed. And we put out this whole series of teleforums on the various topics that we each had expertise in relating to coaching and non-coaching topics. Then we do a few free ones to prime the pump for the paid ones, and that's what we shifted to as our first business model. We also combined our reach, and we each had newsletters at the time, and there were very few newsletters out there. We combined our list, formed a joint newsletter, and started publishing that to gain more exposure as well, and that's one of the techniques we talk about in our book. This was pre-blog, pre-social media.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember those days, and I remember being amazed at what you all were able to create when we were all just, you know, I was still floundering, very much floundering. So you and Ernest have always been role models for me, and I love that you created a whole model out of that because you all formed such a powerful alliance that was so productive and profitable.
Well, you know, we decided to just take a look at all the steps, everything that worked. Both of us save everything. We had all our emails and proposals and, you know, whatever we had created and our newsletter articles. A good part of the book combines a number of things we had already written in our e-newsletter and put it together. The challenge, of course, was, you know, for those of you out there listening who are thinking of writing a book with a collaborator, it probably takes longer for two people to write a book than one, and the voice is different. So So we hired a professional editor to smooth out the two voices into one joint voice so it didn't sound like we were doing the book in fragments, and that was a really important breakthrough. But we worked really hard on consolidating our knowledge to co-author that book.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was quite a bit of work, but wasn't it great that you had all those newsletters that you could pull from and all your emails? Such smart people.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, saving everything is a double-edged sword, and I am both guilty of it and grateful for it.
Well, right, but it's been good. It was good for y'all. Well, what I'd be interested to know is about your work with the leadership in the four generations of the workplace that we're faced with now. There's not anybody that I know that isn't challenged by that.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and it is still what I call in class a hot topic because it has applicability everywhere. We've got four generations in the workplace, and of course the youngest we know as the millennials. A little older than them are the Gen Xers, which a lot have been written about. I usually go backwards from the oldest. Let me do that. The oldest in the workplace are the traditionalists. And these were people born before 1946. And in other times, they would have all been retired. And they're not now, okay? And so here they are. If they have a job, they're keeping the job for many reasons that, you know, we all notice about the state of the economy, society, et cetera. And then are the baby boomers born between 1946 and 1964, and they are a huge generation, thus the boom. And some of them are really facing a lot of interesting challenges, and things like their planned retirement is not coming out as it used to. They're working longer than they plan to. The technology for some is a challenge. There's big differences between the older boomers and the younger boomers, but they are followed by Gen X, and you know, Gen X is known to reject some of the workaholism of the baby boomers and all the stress on the family. The boomers got divorced in record numbers. Gen X doesn't want to, but they don't want to live and die at work. Followed by the millennials, the generation that is supposedly entitled to a lot. We have a lot of them as boomerang kids going back to live at home with their parents, a lot because they can't find jobs. The ones who do have jobs don't want to lead regular hours. And so really, I talk about the generation wars. They're at war with each other. They don't have to be. So a lot of it, and as I wrote an article for Choice Magazine about putting the generations together to benefit from their strengths.
So say more about that, benefiting from the strengths of the millennials to the traditionalists, because that's exactly right. And such what a great coaching model to build on what is working, what are people's strengths, and how
well,
do you help
them? Well, the millennials are innovative and really have a lot to teach. They're creative, they're innovative, they have good ideas, and, you know, we can learn a lot from them. The traditionalists we talk about, and I'm not going to go through everything in between, but there's a brain drain. You know, we refuse, and I know we see this in even organizations and corporations that we work with. If you don't value the history and the wisdom, you're going to lose a lot.
That's
so,
right.
You know, the boomers and the traditionalists say the millennials don't listen. They're always tied into their devices. They don't like meetings. They don't even like email anymore because that's for the older generation. Sometimes they need to be taught how to communicate in the workplace, whereas Gen X is kind of mad at the boomers because they won't get out of the way and let Gen X lead. And I have this interesting brief 3-minute video of various people complaining about all the other generations. And
I use this sometimes.
It's really cute. I use it sometimes, and I have people participating guess which generation these people are in. It's not hard to guess at all, but it gets the conversation going.
Mm-hmm. How great, how great. And we need more innovation and creativity. We just have to be willing to take it, you know, if it comes in the middle of the night or at 11 o'clock in the morning, you know, when they first arrive in the workplace. So it's,
And a lot, of course, depends on the requirements of the workplace. And, you know, I'm teaching a 6-hour, 6-session course, and so the applicability is interesting. It's obvious why it's applicable to major corporations, but I am now teaching it virtually to a group of 20 Methodist ministers. And they, you know, are talking about how this is about attracting younger people to the church and
right.
Taking care of their staffs and looking at growth and what's needed. And they are, you know, interested observers and appliers of all these principles. So it really has a lot of universal appeal. And, by the way, I'm not a Methodist.
But it applies to whether it's a church or a workplace or a family.
A church, a workplace, an organization, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
right.
You know, this kind of topic has a lot of legs. You know, I get called from various people because, you know, one hears about the other or they attend a meeting, and there's lots of different versions of that, you know, from a full-day workshop to a one-hour summary presentation that I can give. The reason I'm mentioning this now and kind of highlighting that is because I also encourage coaches and other people who provide services to really have a focus. I'm a big proponent of niches and specialties and ways to focus as a way to grow your business. And that is, you know, one focus area.
Right. Oh, and it's an important one. And like I said, there's not anybody that's not faced with that, because if you have children or parents or you're in your family situation, or if you have, you know, every workplace has these, all four of these generations. And when there's such a big gap, a wide gap between the traditionalists and the millennials, that it does cause stress in the workplace.
I've got this article that says, "Help, my boss is just a kid." Think about that.
Right, right.
Because there are a lot of, you know, what we consider sort of backwards reporting relationships. Someone can report to somebody 20 years younger than them. And
right.
That takes adjustment. That takes resiliency.
Of course. It's like what I say when I go to the doctor. I don't like going to a doctor with somebody that looks like they're a 12-year-old, but they're just so young now.
Well, how old do police officers look to you when you happen
right.
to be around them?
Right. So young. So young. Well, now, does this relate to your concept of escape from your boomer bubble? Tell us about that.
Yes. Yeah. You know, the boomers are in trouble. If they, for some reason, have lost their job, and particularly the older boomers, and the oldest of whom have reached 2 years ago traditional retirement age, but they're not retiring. But if they have lost their job and they retain the same thinking that got them through their career decades ago, they put themselves in a bubble that is not productive for them. They've got to think differently. If they are looking for a job, and by the way, that article is also on my resource page and can be requested. I've got a reprint from the Journal of Adult and Career Development, and that's where it first appeared. But they've got to think, the old way, out of the box. I like to think of it as out of the bubble, and think about what either they can do independently, what they can learn, how they can retool, and how they can create a different segment of their life by taking advantage of the changes. And, you know, in some ways those changes were to their detriment. They lost their job, and I write in there, nobody's going to give you a job. I know that sounds ominous, but it happens to be true. People of a certain age in most professions looking for a traditional job have sadly aged out. So do something different. Do something independent.
Right. So that's what you probably mean by your term retirement resiliency, or is it?
That's related? A whole separate topic. It's all related, and even not particularly about boomers as such, but about what you can do to keep yourself stretched and interested and interesting, and all of those things that will keep you basically being productive. And it's not only about things that will earn you money, although for many people that is a necessity in retirement, but those things that will provide meaning. And that's what I mean by retirement resiliency, because we all have a lot of choices. And by the way, since we're speaking about retirement, I have to adjust one of the things you said in your very kind introduction, and it was about me being the training director at the UTD Executive and Professional Coaching Program. I retired from that job as of February 1st.
Oh, congratulations.
So now I am co-founder of the program, and now I have a title of emerita in that position. But, the program grew so rapidly to such a size that, the leadership part of it, the management part of it, was taking a lot of time and energy, and I still have my private coaching practice. I really had two full-time jobs. So I decided to let that go, because what I like to do is teach and coach. So I'm still teaching in the program, and I'm still coaching in the university, but I don't have to run the thing anymore.
Right. Isn't that wonderful? That's so great. I'm so proud of you that you were able to create all of that and leave that strong legacy, but not have to be in the hub of the wheel forever.
Yeah. So today, I mentioned this to Catherine and Anna. I came, there was a lunchtime meeting of the ICF North Texas chapter, so I see a lot of my former students, co-faculty members, because, not all, because it's a virtual program, but a good number are local. And they're all saying, how are you enjoying your new free time? And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think I have new free time. I'm doing other things now as well. But it's all by choice. Yeah.
Right. And you get to choose. That's so great. Well, what about the Superwoman Symposium? Tell us what that is and about your involvement.
Well, it has been lying dormant for a while, but the basic principles are about, and we've had so many books about that, and we've got Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In about women and work and motivation. It really is about how Superwoman can take off her cape. It's hard to go flying around in high heels and a briefcase, and many of the women I work with are pulled in so many directions. They have a family. They have a job. They have outside interests, and they're always pressed for time. So a lot of my coaching is about overload, about choices, and about applying the kind of leverage that gets the results they want without just stretching them to, sometimes I feel like I would need a 25-hour day to get done all I get done. So it's kind of, when I do this in a group, a lot of the power has to do with, and I'm thinking of in my new spare time, reinstituting the Superwoman Symposium, which people basically draw strength from other women's experience, best practices, sharing wisdom, et cetera. So that's what I call it. And right now, it's on my website, and, we'll see where that goes.
Well, I would encourage
you. The last time I held a Superwoman Symposium, I think it was in the last millennium.
But that's such a valuable experience for everybody that got to participate. I would strongly urge you to bring that together again, because we can't do it by ourselves. We have to be in communities for support. It takes a team, I say, all day, every day. And if women can come together and share their stories and find out everybody has the same experience and
And you know, a lot of you may be thinking that, well, so men are pulled in many directions, too, and I don't ignore them. And, you know, more than half of my clients are male, but women have a more extreme example of some of those particular challenges, and sometimes it can be very comfortable to share them with other women. These topics, of course, are not alien to men either, and we don't want to overlook that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, right. We don't want to not support them, of course, but like you said, women's experiences are unique. Well, since the purpose of our blog talk radio show, Coach Conversations, is to promote the profession of coaching, and because at least here in Phoenix we have probably 2,000 people that call themselves coaches and only about 200 that are actually members of the ICF, and many of those members are not full-time coaches, I'd love to hear your perspective on building and growing a coaching practice. That's something that every coach seems to be in need of guidance and hearing people's experiences like yours that have been so successful. So tell us your thoughts about that. What does it take to grow it and sustain it?
Well, I think that, first of all, education is important. You want to know what you're talking about, and there are a lot of outlets. I think, you know, it demonstrates high standards and it demonstrates a professionalism to get coach-specific training, and there's so many places to get that and not just retool yourself with a new label, and we all see that. But our prospective clients, both individuals and organizations, they know about standards. In fact, if this is any motivation, sometimes people tell me that, you know, I was talking to so-and-so who is a coach, and he or she told me that hiring companies don't care at all about credentials. So my question to them is, this person you're talking to, does she have a credential? Well, no. And you only hear that from people without credentials. And clearly, you can get hired someplace where they're not going to ask, you're not going to care. But I'll throw out some names of companies for which that coaching credential is a requirement. It may not be a sufficient condition to get hired, but it's certainly a necessary condition to get hired. And in the coaching program at UT Dallas, we have had numerous people. In fact, every cohort has had at least one and sometimes two, three, or four people from Boeing, people from T-Mobile, people from FedEx Kinko, IBM, Oracle, and those, they are there supported by their companies and, in most cases, paid for by their companies. So you say, Okay, so you're an internal coach and they require it. Well, those companies also hire external coaches, as do smaller companies and individuals, and they are investigating, because you can investigate anything. They have the choice of all kinds of qualified coaches. I believe, it's a personal belief, that they are going to pick a coach with a credential from the largest, most recognized professional organization, the ICF.
Right.
So there are
right.
always counterexamples, but that's been my experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I believe that the marketplace takes care of that too. So if you don't get educated to be a coach and you don't have those high standards and that degree of professionalism and you're not credentialed, then eventually the marketplace.
Oh, and there's something else you need, a coach.
Right.
Saying this since for a long time, but every coach needs a coach. And, well, I'm going to take back the word need, because when people are talking to us about coaching, we really don't think people need a coach. It's not that they're needy. That word has a lot of connotation. They deserve a coach.
Yeah.
And that makes
it
a positive. And it is a positive. And in companies, it's the high-potential people that get a coach. And we try so hard, and sometimes it feels like a campaign, not to make coaching remedial. something that,
yes.
And I always tell my students in class when we're talking about growing a practice and the various techniques you could use, we don't want people who are sentenced to coaching.
Right.
Meaning
right.
It's kind of like, okay, you've done wrong, and now we're going to sentence you to a coach.
Right.
That doesn't work. It never
no.
does.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine. They would be so disdainful and so suspicious of the process.
But companies will do it, you know, and I won't take those assignments.
Right, right. I tell them, you know, they have to be able to select from a variety of different coaches, and they have to be able to choose coaching or not coaching, because if we force it to them or sentence them to it, then it's going to be a waste of time and money.
Well, the other thing is when we're talking to a prospective client, I believe that it's a mutual interview, and experienced coaches know that it needs to be a good match on both sides. So it's
right.
not, you know, it's not like we'll take anyone who will take us. And I understand that it is different when people are beginning, and sometimes I like to tell the story of my very, very beginning when I just had a handful of clients. I think my definition of a perfect client was someone who could talk, breathe, and pay.
Right.
And that
yes.
has changed a lot.
A lot. But in the beginning, that was Thomas Leonard's advice to us. You know, if they're breathing, then they're eligible to be coached, and then how you'll grow as a coach is by coaching lots and lots and lots of people.
Well, I think Thomas used to say, coach 100 people before you're even a real coach.
Right, right, right. He had all his lists that we were supposed to compile. Well, anything else about building your coaching practice? I know you and Ernest partnered early on. Were there any other very useful approaches that you'd be willing to share? That
well, a couple of things that I have found important, and these things have become easier now, but in certain senses more challenging. Embracing technology. There wasn't a lot of technology to embrace, but whatever there is, you want to be aware and current. And I think if you're an independent coach, you need a website and plus other connections through social media. LinkedIn is my favorite. In fact, it's the only one I do now, because that's where business people go, and that's
right.
who I coach.
Right.
I think there's another checklist that you may want to access on my website, the 3 R's of marketing. It kind of sums it all up in a very short article: reach, repetition, and relevance. You got to touch a lot of people before you connect with someone who will be your client. Your message can't be just one time. You've got to repeat it. And the message, it must be relevant to the people you want to attract. And it's not general. So this points to the importance of focus, which I mentioned earlier, niches and specialties, and you know who you are and why people should hire you and not someone else. But I think the thing that relaxes us, I think, is to understand it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It doesn't happen overnight.
Right. Right. It's a marathon and not a sprint. We can't just hang out our shingle one day and be a coach and expect to have a full practice the next day. And for
right.
those of us like you and me that have been at it almost 2 decades, there's a, you know, there's everything's cyclical. And so we've had, for me, you know, we've had big years, and then I continue to reinvent myself. I say I've been doing this work for 19 years, but I've, you know, had 35 different approaches to it. So because we are passionate about learning, we're always reinventing ourselves.
Well, that lifelong learning is a big thing. I mean, it's good for our clients. It's good for coaches. It's really good for everybody. And being curious. Yeah.
Being curious. Say more about that and how you encourage people to be curious.
Well, we know in the course of a coaching conversation that, you know, curiosity is applied in all kinds of competencies and tools and the right kind of questioning and, you know, just listening and wanting to understand. But it's the same thing in building the practice as in the coaching conversation. We try things out. I wonder if this will work. It's something I called risk-free experiments, things you could try that if they don't work, become a learning experience, not a failure. So
right.
That curiosity about what might work, what might not work, what is somebody else doing, what is it that another profession has applied for success that I might apply to a coaching profession, and what can I learn from my clients?
Oh,
we've been
yeah.
saying that for years. We learn so
right.
much from clients and become stronger for the next client.
Right.
You know, I've got some slides I do on a presentation about this whole thing, and the slide, I just pulled it out, I'm looking at it now, about things, that whole summary of the 20 tips, tools, and revelations. The one about your profession has value, curiosity, and look for clues, and the illustration is Curious George.
Oh, how precious.
Does everyone know who Curious George is? Maybe.
I bet we do all do. It's such a great graphic to remind us to be curious, and that's really how we stay relevant, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Always being interested in growing ourselves and staying, embracing technology, like you said, and staying ahead of the curve, learning from our clients.
And just like in a coaching call, we're looking for the aha moment, that creating awareness on the part of our client, we're doing that in developing our business, too. Aha, I wonder if that would work.
I love that, looking for the aha moments around business development and seeing what really attracts clients and what helps us retain them, and then replicating that. It's not rocket science if we could just
have
those aha moments. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what's been the secret of your success as far as retaining your clients over these almost two decades?
I want to simplify because I realize that we're pushing up against the time you want to allocate for questions. But really, it's kind of a contrast between, on the one hand, working with clients to solve problems, because once the problem is solved, the coaching will probably end,
right.
versus, on the other hand, being a sounding board, being an ongoing partner in creating strategies. There are lots of tactical things you can do to retain the clients, but that's kind of a strategy that works. I mean, I've got clients that I have been working with continuously, haven't missed a month of coaching for more than a decade, for more than 10 years. Two of them for 15 years. And it's not like they don't get it. They're very smart people doing wonderful things, and they value the sounding board, the strategic partner. Those are the clients that stay a long time. And of course, it's fine if I get a client that is the right match and wants coaching for 1 year. I'm not against that at all. But you can see how this, a really solid coaching practice can be built on clients that stay a long time.
Right. I like to use the term strategic thinking partner. I think that's how my clients see me, as their strategic thinking partner. They don't get a chance to think strategically enough, and so when I'm on their calendar, they get to catch their breath and look at that big picture.
And so you have long-term clients as well, I'm sure.
Yes, but I can't say that I've been as successful as you. I don't think I've had anybody for a decade. Now, this is a growth opportunity for Catherine. I have plenty of clients that I've kept for a long time, 6-8 years, and then I'll still stay connected with them, but I won't be in a paying coaching relationship with them. We'll have such a strong connection. We'll both want to stay connected. So that's something I could use coaching from you, Judy, on how to continue to engage them for a fee rather than just getting my time away.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of things that I've realized that happened. First of all, a significant percentage of them will come back.
Yes.
And that's very interesting. And of course, coaches don't know this until they've had a number of years of experience. The clients come back. And so therefore, when you have ended, or I like to say completed a coaching relationship,
right,
complete it gracefully.
Right.
Don't try to talk them into something they don't want. End with gratitude and call it we've completed, not I'm firing the client or the client's firing
right.
me.
Right.
And a couple of years later, you'll get a call or an email, and they'll say they want to come back. And those are great clients.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I have this thing, and it will only work with people I've worked with for some time now because we have the basis. And the topics get a little more sparse. I'll offer them a once-a-month maintenance call. I probably don't call it maintenance. Some of the clients do. And so we meet once a month at a proportional fee, but they stay connected, and then stuff comes up again, and you don't have to retool and re-explain. You've stayed connected,
right.
and yet they're
right,
not
right,
paying
right.
the same fee they were paying before. So
right.
I don't have a lot of once-a-month clients, but the ones that are very much connected.
This is a very good model because I've been a little too gracious and grateful and just given away my time and expertise by, I put people in what I call the Halpin Company's Alumni Association. And it kind of implies that they can get it all for free now. So so this is very good coaching for me. I love it.
Well, maybe you keep the Alumni Association, and to be in it, all you have to do is have 1 hour of coaching a month.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. That's so great. Well, we don't have any callers, but we're not going to waste our time here because I have a lot more questions I want to ask. Again, the purpose of our Coach Conversations radio show is to promote the profession of coaching and to promote the International Coach Federation. And given that you were in the first 20 people granted the credential of MCC, and given that you were on the board for 8 long years, and given that you were the president in 2003, I would love you. Obviously, Judy, have a tremendous commitment to the profession and to our professional association, and I'd love to just hear you share why. Tell us why you have such a strong commitment and why you've been willing to contribute so generously.
Well, you know, I think it's been, if I had entered the profession and it was at a time where, let's say, the ICF was already large, which it is now, I think it might have proven a little daunting, but it was so small. I was there when a conversation with Thomas Leonard, who said, I think I'll reconstitute this thing I started called the ICF, but I kind of let it go. And it was a beginning by a conversation. You know, it's almost like not the Big Bang theory of the start of the universe, but the Small Bang theory of the start of the universe. So to be in on the creation of the whole thing, and then Thomas asked me to be the producer of the first ICF newsletter called Coaching World, it started so small and grew, it was like, you know, growing a family, a community. And at the same time, we were starting the ICF chapter in Dallas, which was the first official ICF chapter. And that was 10 of us who met in the back room of a restaurant, except that the ICF hadn't even yet started. We called ourselves the North Texas Coaches Association because we were hoping that people would drive over from Fort Worth to Dallas as well to make up our quorum of 10 people. And every time we'd meet at a restaurant for a few meetings, and then the restaurant would somehow close, and we had to find a different place to meet. So that was the beginnings. It was granular. It was organic. And then, of course, to watch both the chapter grow and the organization. And I wasn't going to get involved nationally, except that, you know, I was so busy writing that newsletter for Thomas when he was actively involved that they put me on the first board. And I think, Catherine, when you were on the board, was it the first board or it was early on, wasn't it?
Yes, I was on the board from 1998 to 2000, but it wasn't the earliest sport. It was I think a year after.
Yeah.
I think it was 1907 when the two associations came together and.
Yeah, the two associations came together, and it was an enormous board at first. And that's how I got on it, because I wasn't really looking, and there were no elections or anything. So then by the time I had met with the board, and the meetings were wild because there were so many people there, and then they were holding formal elections, they kind of talked me into running. And I know that doesn't sound like a very strategically planned involvement, but that's how it happened. And then we just grew and grew and grew. But I want to encourage anybody listening to this who wants to get involved in what is now a very large organization, get involved through your chapter, or there are committees at the ICF that you can get involved, so you get to know people and get known and perhaps can aspire to be on the national or international board.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I would encourage people. It's no better way to meet other coaches and be, feel like you're part of something bigger than yourself than to get involved in the ICF at both at the chapter level and at the international level. It was extremely instrumental for me in feeling confident that and getting my first coaches. I like to tell the story at our very first coach conference in 1996 in Houston, that we were we had our round table discussions around round tables, and I was at one in that big ballroom, and I turned, and the one that I was facing was Cindy Reinhart. And something about integrating your life and your coaching. I hired Cindy to be my coach shortly thereafter, and we've stayed very well connected and dear friends now almost 2 years later.
That's a great story. Well, you know, the reminiscing is great. I think that was the conference where coaches made people cry in the coaching demo. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the point here is that those connections that you make professionally, they turn into friends, they turn into close business relationships, and it's interesting because you feel like you can reach out and call anybody that you have studied with, been on a board with, talked to at a meeting. In fact, I think, Catherine, you and I hadn't talked for years and years, and yet I got the email from you, and it was like we talked yesterday.
Right. Oh, of course, because we have so much history of being on these conference calls, board meetings, and first it was our teleconferences at Coach U getting our training, and then it was board meetings on conference calls, and we just have so much good, rich history, so fun. Well, we just have a few more minutes, and is there anything else, Judy, that you'd like to share with the coaches that are going to hear this over time? You know, this we get sometimes over 4,000 listeners that download these shows and listen to them, and we would invite them to do that and share it and try to get the expand our network even further. But any pearls of wisdom that you want to share here in the last few minutes?
I'm just looking now. I pulled out my tips, tools, and revelations, and I think, you know, as kind of summary observations, these will be more general than specific, so hopefully they will be useful to the widest variety of listeners and participants. You know, I've talked about long-term relationships. I want to say something about an ideal coach-client relationship. And this is about the client's agenda. One of the little tips says they want what they want. What I mean by that is the client owns the agenda. We know that from all, you know, the study of the coaching competencies. But don't try to tell them what they want. Listen carefully, be curious, get the clues, and don't try to shift the client. Just try to gain them awareness. They want what they want. And part of this is a lot of us come with a wide variety of tools, like assessments. Well, if you're going to squeeze it in and say, everyone's got to take this assessment, the client doesn't want to take the assessment, there's another way to get to them. So this is part of don't squeeze a square peg into a round hole. And, you know, that's coach resilience. Another thing I like to say is don't coach Hamlet. What do I mean by that? To be or not to be. To be or not to be. The ambivalent client can be so frustrating, and you might try to coach them out of their ambivalence, but if it doesn't work, it's going to be frustrating for both parties. So if
right.
you are seeing endless Hamlet, this may not be a coachable person.
Right. Very, very wise. And these resources and many more are on your CoachNet.com website. And we
yeah.
so
and
appreciate.
I would suggest there's two doors there. One is the coach door, and one is a general business and professional client door. I welcome you to go through both, but for the resources, there's more in the general business door than there
great.
Is in the coach door, because the coach door has only those things specific to coaches, and
right.
you'll find that and more in the business door.
Oh, great. Well, as soon as this call's over, I'm going to go and look for the Alliance Ability Checklist, because I can't wait to see that. That's going to be great.
And by the way, that's not a metaphorical door. When you get to my website, you'll know in your right place, because there are really two doors there.
Okay, good. Yeah, I've been to your website, and I've seen those two doors, so it's easy to track. It's very clear. So, Judy Fell, we're so grateful for your extreme generosity, not just being on our radio show today, but sharing your wisdom and your resources on your website at CoachNet.com. We're very, very grateful. Again, Coach Conversations is sponsored by the International Coach Federation Phoenix, Arizona chapter. It's produced by Anna Malikian, Ph.D., ACC, and an elite-level Book Yourself Solid Coach. And it's hosted by me, Catherine Halpin, MCC. We want to encourage all of you that are listening to get your free CCEUs for your ICF-credited coach renewals. When you listen to our Coach Conversations radio show, all 30 months of our previous shows all qualify for the CCEU credits with ICF, and these particular credits can be used for your individual credential renewal, not for your initial credential, but and not from a coach training school credential, but for your individual credential renewals. And you can find out lots more details about this at our website, icfphoenix.com. So thank you again, Judy. We're so grateful for your commitment to our profession and all that you've done to grow the profession and to grow all of us as coaches and for your
well,
wisdom.
Thank you for your gracious hosting, and it's been a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Judy. Take care now.
Bye.
Bye.